Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Businessology Show. I'm Jason Blummer, your host, and our firm, Blummer CPAs. We've been sponsoring this show for over a decade, since Dan Maul and I started this show over a decade ago. I can't believe we've been running this thing for so long. So you know we bring great guests that know how to run agencies, that consult with people on how to run agencies, make more money, grow, sell, those kind of things. So we touch on a lot of great topics. So we're glad to have you, and I'm pumped to have my friend Austin Church. He's joining us, and he has a massive background, brand consultant, online entrepreneur, app builder, has an MA in literature. I mean, he's got really all the chops of everything. What he does now is he actually consults with creative consultants that make six figures or more and really helping them learn how to run a business and act like entrepreneurs. And he's going to teach us a lot about how to do that. He and his wife, Megan, they're out in Knoxville, Tennessee with their kids, and we're piping them into the studio, and I'm pumped to have Austin. So Austin Church, thanks for hanging out with us on the Businessology Show, man. I appreciate it.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very cool. Now, what's the liquor story of all the bourbon behind you?
I share a studio with my friend Joey, and his podcast, I think he always does it like at 4 or 5 p.m. and it's like cocktail hour. And so he keeps his whole collection right here, and I always have to offer a disclaimer about I'm not day drinking, you know. And this doesn't belong to me. So it's a nice place to be. It's a nice studio other than the bottles, right?
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, let me ask you something. So you have an MA in literature. Like you really went down the road of content writing. What kind of led you then over into the marketing agency space? Kind of what was that background that led you through that journey?
Desperation. I needed a job, and it was October 2008. My dad had a come to Jesus talk with me right after grad school, and he was like, you really need to get a job. But when I got a job at a digital agency, I loved it, and I found that, you know, my background in poetry and prose really lent itself well to copywriting, particularly poetry. I was surprised at how well that translated to copywriting. Like hearing the music and language and being able to, you know, in the academic world or literary world, it's called the economy of language. Yeah. How do you make sure every single word carries a lot of weight? Well, that's copywriting, you know? Yeah. So that was my entree into the world of agencies.
Very cool. Well, you've done some copywriting for us, and it's you warned us up front. You're like, hey, I'm going to be pretty picky because every word means something, and it really is something you're really gifted at. So that was really cool. And you've got that in the chops of what you do in coaching. So that's kind of what I want to dive into. So you work with creative consultants making six figures, and I'm curious as to why is it six figures? Does, you know, what particularly does that mean? And I'm also curious about these creative consultants you work with, could be that broad term of freelance too, these people working on their own. And are you seeing a change in our economy, really? I'm saying post pandemic, with people starting to work on their own more, or stopping that effort and starting to work in agencies more, or going to a company? Like, what are you seeing happen with these six figure consultants?
I'll answer the second question first. 2019, highest percentage of people ever, or I should say number, 59 million people in the U.S. freelanced in some capacity.
Wow.
That number went down in 2020. It went back up in 2021. Mm. And, you know, you've heard people kick around the term great resignation. Yep. I don't think people are actually working less. I think perhaps they're more interested in working on their own terms. And so you have people who got a taste of working remotely, working from home during the pandemic. And, you know, you're at home, you can take the dog out for a walk, you can make your own lunch, there's no commute, maybe there's no annoying colleague or coworker or boss sort of breathing down your neck. And I think people got a taste of that. And I think that's why you're seeing the number go up. And based on all of the stats that I've read, I keep an up-to-date list. And it's something my virtual assistant helps me with, just always trying to stay on top of industry trends. All the numbers are pointing up, and the vast majority of freelancers report that their freelance income has replaced and exceeded their 9-to-5 income. And, you know, the reason I have a job as a coach and consultant is a lot of people are really good at the work itself. And that could be anything from copywriting to design to software development, whatever. And they're able to get some traction. They're able to make some money. But they reach a certain point where they don't necessarily, or they haven't protected their free time. And so I had this one client, she summed it up so perfectly. She said, you know, I had my first $20,000 month and I was miserable and I really wanted to quit. So it's like she had her best month ever.
Yeah.
She's thinking, how on earth can I repeat that? Like I nearly, like I'm burning out. And so, there are a lot of freelancers, creative consultants who, when things finally start to click, a whole new breed of problems crops up.
Yeah.
And one of those is, oh, wait, like just feeding more of my own time into the business machine.
Yeah.
That worked for a while, but now I'm burning down or I've burnt out and I want to quit. Something has to give. And so that is my sweet spot because I experienced that 2015, 2016, burned out hard. And so I think we always have more compassion and empathy and more expertise too when we're coaching people through an experience that we ourselves have had. And so that's why I love working with these folks. They're my people. They're creatives.
Yeah.
They're ambitious. Typically they want to make money, but then what's the point of all that extra money if you're too busy or too burned out to enjoy it? And so that's when I like to, you know, ideally come into the picture and say, let's get back your free time. Let's have more fun. Ideally without sacrificing income.
Yeah. Do you like, is there, when somebody's going to, when these freelance, these creative consultants and freelancers are going to a job, there are boundaries within that job, right? You go into work and then you leave work and there's some delineation probably in their mind. But when we all do go work at home, there's really not a lot of lines, right? We can just keep working or we can just not work enough. Like we can, we can really swing for ditches and are like, Is that just some people? Like work at home is not wrong or bad, but it is for some people. Working at a, you know, an office is not wrong for some people, but it does hinder other people. So is it just them self-disciplining themselves to know I need to set my own boundaries now to stop at a certain time?
I think it's what you mentioned. You know, you have this scaffolding around you. A 9-to-5 job. And part of that structure is the commute, right? Like you have this mode switch where you get in your car, get onto a bus or get onto a train or whatever. Then you come home and you can sort of mentally unplug or detach from the work. But when you're working at home and you're working for yourself, all of that scaffolding, all of that structure, you have to impose that on yourself. And we all have different personalities. We're all have varying levels of competence when it comes to self-discipline. But then you add to that scarcity mindset. Like if you've ever had a month or many months or years where there wasn't enough money, where there wasn't enough work, you develop this habit of saying yes to everything. And so there are a lot of freelancers and consultants who have come out of this season of want. Well, if they find themselves in a season of plenty, now they have more work than they can handle. There's some mindset work that has to be done. They have to become more selective. Some of them need to specialize, niche down. Some of them, you know, need to get busy And I know the CPA in you will appreciate me saying this, but you need the emergency fund. You need to have business operating expenses socked away in the you know, operating expenses account. But there's a paradigm shift required when you've been really hungry and you're not hungry anymore, but you still carry forward some of the bad habits of saying yes to everything.
So there's, and, so there's baggage, right? Well, from anybody's past, there's baggage they're going to pull forward a lot of times to apply to some future situation that may have changed. And I guess that's, it sounds like what you do when you consult them is you help them to become just more sophisticated business owners, which is, I mean, niching and selecting and pricing, all these things you do all day long with your clients are just more mature type behaviors they eventually have to teach themselves how to do. And it sounds like if they had a job and now work for themselves, they don't really understand a lot of that structure. Are you applying business structure to their now freelance life? Is that a lot of what you do for them?
That's right. I came out of grad school never having had a business class or a marketing class. And I had a total blind spot. I never would have guessed that a poet could become a workaholic.
Right.
That, like, I probably prided myself on being super laid back and like, let's suck the marrow out of the bones of life and like this whole sensibility. Right. Even had the black turtleneck from J. Crew to complete the ensemble.
You had to.
So I was clueless, right? And so I had to learn everything through trial and error, like what works and what doesn't work. Oh, what doesn't work is never working on the business and treating that as its own project.
Yeah.
Hey, I can optimize this and I'll actually get some outputs that I really want if I spend a little bit more time thinking about, well, which projects have the highest effective hourly rate. It's profit is a hard concept to grasp when you're selling time and creativity.
Yeah.
So even finding something like effective hourly rate that you can use as a measuring stick to compare the profitability of project A to project B, all that stuff, it didn't come naturally to me. I had to kind of like fight tooth and claw to really understand how do you treat a business as an asset that can spit out money that you can optimize. And it just so happens that the work product, you know, involves your skills.
Yeah.
But you get better results if you optimize this thing called a business over here. And a lot of the folks that I work with, they are really, really good at the work itself. They just need to graduate a little bit and start thinking about, I call it the six P's, positioning, packaging, pricing, pipeline, psychology, and process.
Nice.
And those are the levers that, if you put a little bit more force into those, there are force multipliers that give you better results with less effort. So
very cool.
I want to make it very clear. The people I work with tend to be very, very smart.
Yeah.
It's not like a lack of intelligence. It's more like, hey, just let's make sure we're, you know, scheduling CEO time in your calendar so that you can work on these things.
Yeah, for sure. Is there some, so you coach six figure consultants. Is that a magical number, or that's just large enough that they're now obviously running a real business. You have to act like it now. So what is that six figure number? Is that just a number you found? That's where they're really starting to need to run a business like an entrepreneur, I guess. Is that right?
So the numbers, it is purposeful. I mean, I've certainly worked with consultants and freelancers who haven't cracked that six figure mark yet. But six figures is, first of all, they can afford me at that point, right? There is some extra revenue that they could say, hey, maybe I could pay for some outside perspective and some help here. But beyond that, it's kind of like what you said. That number is a nice leading indicator for the maturation of the business. So they've already started to think about things like horizontal specialization and vertical specialization.
Yeah.
They've started to think, you know, I just there are certain projects here that I really enjoy and certain that I can do, but I don't really enjoy. Mm. They've already started down that path of how do I get better results with less effort? And so because they're already going down that path, I can join them on that path and say, hey, I can put some fuel on your fire here and accelerate your progress down this path because I've been down it myself. And I can tell you exactly how to spend your time to get the best results.
Yeah. Is it like, do you help them change their path? Like, are some people listening, maybe they're going down a path and it's actually, hey, that might not be the right path. And they're wondering, maybe I shouldn't be doing this anymore. Do you help people change the direction or what questions would you ask them to go, are you doing the right thing? That's hard to question yourself, you know.
Sometimes. I mean, a lot of ambitious, laid-back freelancers, right? Because a lot of people get into self-employment because they want a certain lifestyle.
Yeah.
They don't want work to consume their lives. Mm. So they maybe crack that six-figure mark, and then they start to think about leverage, that concept of better leverage.
Yeah.
And for freelancers and people who sell creativity, it's their problem-solving aptitude, there are typically three paths that they start to look at when they're more interested in having more free time and fun. And those are, hey, maybe I should scale up into like a lean agency. I could start out with some contractors and maybe eventually hire full-time. That's number one. Number two is maybe I could pivot to value-based consulting. So maybe they've been charging hourly or by the project, but now they're waking up to this idea that some of the work I do is extremely valuable to clients in this niche.
Yeah.
What if instead of charging, you know, $5,000 for identity design, I could charge $20,000? Or 30,000 or 50. So they're waking up to this possibility and want to make that transition fully into value-based consulting. And then the third option is digital products or an online business that truly has that leveraged business model. It's a one-to-many model. I could make a course and then sell it 1,000 times. And wouldn't that be cool? And I have all this expertise. I've built all this stuff for other people. Now I could turn around and sell my sawdust. So sometimes people do come to me and they don't know that what they want is a more leveraged business model. And then I use that language and they're like, oh, that's what I want. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
That's the track I send them down. So I have three different tracks typically that I send people down based on their goals, really. And not everyone has the same goals, and that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's part of vetting through what they want, I guess. And one question I was asking is, you know, when on one of those paths, when they are, you know, building a lean agency or something like that, and they start through the process of leveraging other team members, like, do you know, like, how far do they go until they need to hire a person? And that's that's got to be different for the different paths, you know. So how do they know when it's time to hire, and what role typically would they need to start hiring first as they're scaling up, or is that different depending on the path they're on?
I think it does depend, but I find the advice I find myself giving most often is not, hey, go try to find a junior copywriter who can take some of this work off your plate.
Yeah.
The advice I give most often is go hire a virtual assistant or even a local executive assistant.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's interesting.
There's this, I made the mistake. Like, I've hired how many copywriters?
And
ultimately, the things that were keeping me out of my zone of genius were administrative and operational tasks.
Yeah.
And so if I wanted to think about how do I get back the most time, the most quickly, it had to do with identifying what I call low leverage, high frequency tasks. calendar management.
Yeah.
Social posting. Maybe I even write the content, but someone else could post it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of ways that we spend our time day in, day out that someone else could do better. Someone else could do with more enthusiasm. Someone else could do more quickly. So if you can identify those, create standard operating procedures for them. Don't ever hire, this is broad advice, but don't ever hire someone to be a surrogate or a replacement for a process. Create a process and then hire someone to run the process and improve the process over time. So you identify this, these low leverage, high frequency tasks, you know, start with 3 to 5, create simple SOPs for those.
Yeah.
Hire a virtual assistant, executive assistant to run those. And you're like, like this deep breath when someone needs to reschedule, you're like, no problem. I'm CCing my VA. And like, I'll bet I got back, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes a week right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Just by delegating some of the scheduling stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what I recommend most often now. Yes, there comes a time to hire someone whose creative skill set is very similar to yours, so that you can sort of scale up the number of copywriting projects that you take on, or identity design or whatever. But I think the first, best, most strategic hire is usually, I need to get this low leverage, high frequency stuff off my plate.
Yeah. No, I like how you low leverage, you know, high frequency. I think a lot of times when people are busy, the first thing they think of is, I'm busy doing a lot of copywriting or design, so I need help to do copywriting or design. And so they try to hire themselves, right? But at a smaller company, you can't really find yourself, or you can't pay them because it's you. And so it really makes sense to find those administrative tasks early on is kind of the, you know, the first person you want to hire. So Austin, we're talking about these levers, these things that you, these advantages you take advantage of. And maybe you mentioned the six P's, those are some of them, but kind of talk to me through some of the levers. Cause a lot of times when you're consulting, you say there are these things in the creative entrepreneur's life they're not using that they need to pull and push, and they're not using those. What are examples of those that the listeners would hear and maybe identify? Or do you have to go searching with that, the person you're coaching, you have to search through what those could be, or are they general for all people? What are those levers to pull?
So, great question. I think there are two categories. One of them is sort of business model level.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
There are levers that exist for a creative consulting business. There are levers that exist for like a medical practice.
Okay,
and I'll use that funny example first, right?
Yeah.
You're a physician. You want to increase the profitability of your practice. There are, if you were to actually go in and look, hey, which procedures do we perform most often?
Yeah.
You might realize that there is one cash pay only. We do not bill this through insurance. We have a really great profit margin. Maybe we should put more emphasis on that. So actually identifying where your best profit margins are, that you can get more leverage if you sell more of that than if you sell more of this other thing over here that doesn't have that fat profit margin, right?
Makes sense.
So that's just one example. And so at the business model level, there are levers for different types of businesses, right? For freelancers, the levers tend to be the same from one freelance business, one creative consulting business to the next. But there are also levers that are more personal. So I love to write. That's my background. I'm good at it. I enjoy it. I get paid directly. So I might look at LinkedIn and say that platform offers me significantly more leverage because my writing ability gets rewarded on LinkedIn. So if I'm consistently posting there, then I'm just going to see higher return, right?
Yeah.
And that's makes different sense. Than something like TikTok, where right. I don't really enjoy making videos
yeah.
and I'm not super comfortable on camera. And though yeah. I think I could become comfortable on camera yeah. through practice.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So someone who is really comfortable on camera and even excited about making videos, TikTok's going to be, or YouTube or whatever, higher yeah. leverage. So yeah. for freelancers, those six P's, positioning, packaging, pricing, pipeline, psychology, and process, I think those are levers for every single freelancer, every single consultant.
Okay.
But part of truly leveraging this idea of leverage, that's too meta probably,
yeah,
but right. is actually figuring out what is your zone of genius? What are the handful yeah. of things that you're really, really good at?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should be spending more of your time on those.
Yeah. And like you say, of some of the six P's, like psychology and process, there's going to be different psychology to the different freelancers you're working with. Each leverage lever is going to be different. Like there might be a copywriter's processes, the ones they're going to leverage are going to be different than a designer's mm-hmm. processes. And so mm-hmm. I guess that's where you'll drill down into that process P and find mm-hmm. out for the one you're consulting, what is their specific leverage. And that kind of specific work does take a coach, right? We do a lot of coaching and you coach, and there's such value in coaching because a lot of times as people, we don't see our own levers. You know, mm-hmm. we don't know what ours are, and it's really hard to make objective assessments about ourselves. And so having an objective
sure.
third party come and in a trusted way, probe and ask and push, mm-hmm. like through counseling, through therapy, those things really, and through coaching, open up people's minds. And so what do you need in an entrepreneur to be able to do that work, to coach? Do you need them? Can you spot it? Like they're open and ready for this, or they're in a lot of pain right now? Or what are you looking for to have success with coaching an entrepreneur?
So, I mean, there is a certain readiness, right?
Yeah.
And I think that readiness comes with recognizing that no one's handing out merit badges for doing it all on your own, you know, and you
right.
look around and you're like, well, like top athletes have coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out that like top entrepreneurs have coaches.
Yeah.
And then maybe you talk around and you realize, wait, this friend over here, this colleague, like this other freelance writer, she has a coach. Wait,
yeah.
So this is a thing. So
yeah.
I think it sort of builds until people realize I've gotten maybe as far as I can get just trusting my own judgment.
Yeah.
And I actually need some outside perspective. I think another thing that is like sort of culminating, like a factor that culminates in this decision, I need to hire a coach, is people get worn out with
yeah.
all of the information available online.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're like, yeah, I could watch 20 hours of YouTube videos. And,
yeah.
but finding that one insight I need is like finding a needle in a haystack.
For sure.
So what if I just go find someone who's been there and done
yeah.
that and say, how did you do it? And a lot of this really does come down to mindset.
Yeah.
A lot of us, we really have trouble graduating to the next level because of limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
And I talk to so many people who think that their beliefs aren't limiting and that their beliefs are unique. And I cannot
yeah.
tell you how many people who are like, well, I don't have enough experience yet to call myself a consultant.
Yeah.
And I like have to hide my hand, like laugh behind yeah. my hand.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I literally heard that 30 minutes ago. Like
yeah.
someone else. And so you have overconfidence bias, this cognitive bias that
right.
oftentimes yeah. the more humility people have and the more they learn, the more modest they are about what they know. So ironically, the people who are most confident in what they know often know the least.
That is wild.
And so I have the great joy and privilege of coming alongside people who are really, really impressive at this
yeah.
thing and saying, okay, so at what point do you know enough to start positioning yourself as a consultant?
Yeah.
And taking the plunge and doing the value-based pricing thing. And they're like, they laugh because they're like, well, there is no arrival. I guess if there's no arrival, the best time to start is right now. So that just helped people peel back those layers of belief and realize you could have gotten started last year. You already know enough. It's time to take the plunge.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, so, and I guess practically some of the things you've mentioned that you help people do is maybe they do brand or design, and you push them into, I guess, a higher value related service called strategy, which can mean a million different things, right, in the profession. And you start pushing them to sell strategy as a standalone service. Like, you know, if you're a designer, you don't only have to sell a logo, sell some strategy, right? And why do you do that? What is that? Why is it standalone? Why do you push them to do strategy and sell that as standalone service?
So I define strategy as the collection of decisions, group of decisions that you plan to make to get from where you are to where you want to be. Mm. And I had enough clients come to me who didn't have that plan in place and didn't always have the expertise to line up the steps in a way that would sort of be effective. So they're like, hey, we need a new website. And I'm like, well, you haven't named the company. You can't register a domain name until you have a company name, and you can't build a website without a domain. So, you know, we're quite literally disordered here. We've gotten the wrong order. And, you know, I was just the lowly freelancer, like, but I'm sitting there thinking, I feel like I'm the only person in this room who isn't high. Like, why are we talking about the website before we've had the naming strategy session?
Ugh. Yeah.
So it turns out that a lot of other freelancers, they've got good strategic minds. And in order, you know, half the time, in order to even get to a proposal, they have to help their clients organize their thoughts.
Yeah.
Define what the project even is, set priority, make some early choices. Oh, are we just sort of, to stick with the identity design example, are we doing completely new? Are we doing a refresh of what exists? Yeah. Are we just doing some new typography lockups? What is the budget? So they're already doing this project road mapping stuff, or, you know, they're like, okay, so you need UI UX design for your product. Do you all have a strategy, like a go-to-market strategy or a launch strategy for this product? Well, no, we don't. And, well, hey, I just did three projects where I was involved from the very beginning until all the way up through launch. Do you want help putting together some best practices?
Yeah.
You know, even putting some milestones in a calendar. So there are a lot of freelancers who are already doing strategy. They may just not be charging a premium.
That's interesting. I think when we've worked with people too, we find they couple things together, right? And they'll put it under a practical heading of branding, right? Something they can readily explain, somebody will purchase, because there's fear in pricing things like strategy that are a little more ethereal and maybe misunderstood by the client. It sounds like you're kind of telling them to peel those apart. It's like, no, you're dumping strategy into your brand work already. You need to pull that out, put it up front, price for that, and then also do the brand work, because this strategy piece has a lot of power to it. And you're saying they're already doing it anyway. You have to, just to make a freaking proposal for the logo almost.
That's right. That's right. And so if you make the proposal and it doesn't get accepted, well, now you've lost all the time that you actually, where you created a ton of value for the client by helping them get clarity around what they even want.
Yeah.
And another big an aha moment for me came when I read The Business of Expertise by David C. Baker.
Great book. Yeah,
and very good. It's toward the middle. I've got this underlined probably more than once. But he talked about how if you look at strategy and implementation as two phases of a project, he just poses the question, where do most of the headaches enter the picture? Well, during the implementation phase. And so he, you know, makes a case for make it so that your clients can't even enter the implementation room in the house unless they've passed through the strategy room first.
Yeah, I love that visual. Like, that's a great visual. Right.
So there's only one room into the house, and it goes into the foyer or the lobby, which is strategy.
Strategy,
So this revolutionized my business because, first of all, I realized he was right. Most of the headaches happen during the implementation phase. But I also realized that I could sell strategy as a standalone offer and get paid to vet my clients.
Yeah.
Because now I've had a chance to work with them, and I'm like, oh, that client was Hot Mess Express. There's no way I want to be the one who's actually doing the thing. So I give them this actionable plan. They're pleased, and they're like, you know, hey, are you gonna, are you gonna head this up for us? And I'm like, I can't. I can make some recommendations, but I would not touch your project with a 27 foot pole. But here's the other thing, right? If you do want to continue the relationship, well, when you deliver the report, you just put your proposal at the end. Here are the next steps.
Yeah.
So you're now getting paid to create your own proposals
and
vet the client.
Yeah.
And if you sell strategy first, you typically get much stronger positioning. So if they pay a premium for the strategy session, well, then you're not going to then give them like, you're not going to be dirt cheap when it comes to any implementation. So there were just so many boxes that strategy checked that I'm like, I made a big pivot in 2016 and just started selling strategy almost more than anything else. And now I'm beating that drum and I'm like, hey, everyone else should sell strategy too. I'm telling you, it's a better way to live.
Right? Yeah. Well, and it can be more enjoyable of a service, right? Because it's really, it can give the client what they really want, sometimes that they don't even know to ask for. And, you know, when we're coaching people, we're like, as professionals, we have to sell things clients aren't asking for because they don't know to ask us for the things they truly need. They only ask for that want, that logo. And so pushing them in places they don't know they should be going. Are there particular ways you help them price strategy? I mean, that's pretty ethereal too, because that range can be huge depending on the person and, you know, what they think about themselves or where do you start them or how do you price strategy?
So I think a good place to start is saying, like, what's an hourly rate that feels really good to you? And just double that. And that is what, like, so if it's you think it'll take you 90 minutes to do project road mapping and maybe another hour after that to clean up your notes and just put together a report. Okay. 2.5 hours.
Right.
So if you know, your hourly rate is 125, we'll double that. So now you're at 250.
Yeah.
Multiply that times 2.5. So what's that? 625.
Yeah.
Something you know, like that. Or something like that.
Yeah.
So great. Like you're like 90 minute strategy session. We're going to do some project road mapping. I'm going to help you gather all your thoughts. You're going to leave with an actionable plan and I'll deliver it a couple of days later.
Yeah.
And whether you choose to hire me or not to help you implement the plan, I promise you, you're going to save money in the long run.
Yeah.
By just spending a little bit more time, I sometimes call it axe sharpening. Before you start hacking away at the tree, spend a little bit more time sharpening your tools, right?
Yeah.
And it's $625, and like I said, it's going to be a great plan whether or not you hire me. And so I think that's a good place to start. But to your point, the sky's the limit in terms of raising the price from there.
Yeah. And I think one thing that helps people when they get into that strategy, so they're starting to sell it and they're like, wow, somebody just paid me for something I would have thrown in to the logo. And they go, that's amazing. and they will deliver it, and you know, and often go, wow, that was way worth way more than what they paid me, right?
I want more of that.
Right. And they're like, I want more of that, so you can get addicted to it. And they're like, I'm not doing that for less than $1,500 because that is extremely valuable. And so it almost gives you confidence to start selling more and more or raising your price more and more. So it sounds like you're getting them to just dip their toe in the water of selling strategy. And it's, you know, we're not selling snake oil to people. It changes the client. It helps them think through things that they never would have thought through. And sometimes we're building and making the wrong brands and logos for people that we didn't have go through a process of thinking and planning.
That's right. So the assumption is that clients come to you already knowing what they want and how to get it. And my experience that is that probably 70% of my clients do not have a well-defined project, well-defined plan, and then a really great crew of freelancers or full-time employees or mix of both to then make it happen. And yet it's hard for entrepreneurs to be like, I have no idea what I want. Like, no one's going to really come right out and say that. But I wouldn't have been able to sell so many of these strategy sessions over the years, workshops, clarity sessions. I wouldn't have been able to sell them over the years if there weren't a really big need for clarity, confidence, planning.
Man, that's amazing. All right, we're running out of time here, Austin. I'm just curious, how do you do all the things you do? So you have your own agency. You do coaching at Freelance Cake, and you've launched your own podcast. You used to run apps. So how do you manage all that?
Ineffectively.
Okay.
No, I am a big fan of a written planner, like a physical planner. I'm a big fan of an app called Things, which I just use for my own task management. I'm a big fan of ClickUp, which is the project management platform that I use with clients. And then I have a bunch of other apps. Like I have a really good tech stack at this point. And I think I've started using Paperbell for coaching. Laura Roeder, that's her deal. She did meet Edgar before. But I think it goes back to what are the most important ways I can spend my time? And then what are the tools that help me do that effectively? And then lots and lots of trial and error. And wow, that was a really crappy day. I didn't get anything done. What am I going to do differently? So a regular cadence of reflection.
I love it. Well, cool. Well, Austin, thanks for joining us on the Businessology Show, man, and just walking through all this strategy and knowledge. If people want to learn more, what's probably the best place they can go online to find some of the things you write or do or courses that you run? Or
find me on Twitter, Austin L. Church, LinkedIn, Austin L. Church, or freelancecake.com.
Okay. Very cool. Well, thanks for joining us, Austin. We appreciate it. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on the Businessology Show. You can check the show notes and get a free book we've written on pricing called The Intimacies of Pricing Your Customer. And it's a meaty book, 60 pages of teaching you how to do some of these things, even that Austin has mentioned today. So thanks again for joining us on the show. We'll check you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.